Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Extraordinary, Slay the Dragon, and The Times of Bill Cunningham. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How you doing this week?
Won't complain. How are you?
Doing just fine, thank you. I won't complain either. Obviously, we are all under the still under the shelter in place and stay at home and all that sort of thing conditions. At least those of us who are here in the more or less the eastern part of the country. I guess it's pretty much across the country, and that means the movie theaters are for the most part still closed. However, as I've been pointing out in recent weeks, the some enterprising movie theaters such like organizations are now streaming movies which can be accessed from afar. So it's quite wonderful. I just recently looked at The Times of Bill Cunningham, which I'll talk about in a few moments, which is streaming courtesy of The Movie House in Millerton, New York. And I don't live near there, but fortunately I can avail myself of their streaming service. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I've also been streaming films lately from the Parkway Theater in Baltimore and both Film Forum and Film at Lincoln Center in New York City. So, you know, it's kind of nice. Movies that otherwise might not be available to everyone are available to everyone, at least if you have the facilities to stream things. And I think many of us do these days, and since it costs a few dollars to buy a movie ticket in a theater, you know, it costs a few dollars to stream these movies at home. But I think it's I think this is not an entirely unsatisfactory time for movie going, even for new movies or fairly new movies. And the first movie I want to talk about today, Extraordinary, is this is just a little anecdote, but quite a while ago, I guess it was a few weeks ago now, there I was walking down the street to a theater near where I live to see Extraordinary, and on the movie theater marquee there was a big sign saying "Gone Fishing," which meant that they were, that's when I found out that they were closed. They had not spread the news. So okay, that's fine with me. So I came home and I didn't see it until it turned out to then be streaming. So now I have seen it, and now I will tell people about it. And again, it is available to anybody who wants to see it. And it's not a great movie, but it's an okay little movie. The thing that bothers me the most about it is that the title, Extraordinary, suggests that this is an extraordinary film, and it's not. It's really, really ordinary, but it's a nice little movie. Directed by Mike Ahern and Enda Luffman, and it is a kind of an international co-production, but it's basically an Irish movie. It takes place in Ireland, has a lot of Irish characters, a certain amount of Irish humor, so it's actually quite Irish. But it's not one of those movies where you need subtitles, like for us Americans to understand the dialects. The people speak pretty plainly and clearly. The main character is played by Maeve Higgins, who's also a stand-up comedian, so she knows how to talk and be understood by broad audiences. And Extraordinary, or maybe I'll just call it Extraordinary, is a movie about occurrences that are out of the ordinary. It's a genre I'm normally very suspicious of. It's basically a comedy fantasy. I couldn't possibly call it a horror movie because it's all extremely lighthearted, even though it has a little bit of yucky stuff in it. There's no real violence in it or anything like that. But it is about, I'm normally suspicious of the comedy fantasy because usually they end up neither being especially funny nor especially fantastical. But I was sort of mollified a little bit in that respect a few years ago by What We Do in the Shadows, which is a wonderful movie. Talking about the original movie now, not the spin-off stuff that's happened more recently. And it really convinced me that that genre can be handled really well. So I don't think Extraordinary is anywhere near that scale. But again, it's a pleasant little movie. And it is about this woman whose name is Rose, and she is a driving instructor. So we're not in an especially glamorous circumstance here. That's what she does. She teaches people how to drive in her little roadster. And the thing is that her father, who we see at the very beginning of the movie, her father has died, but he was a paranormal researcher and apparently not a very good one. We see him in the beginning. In fact, we see him over the course of the film in various sort of old VHS cassettes of him doing his educational work, instructing the public about the importance of learning how to deal with ghosts and so forth. And he apparently wasn't much good at this. And his daughter, Rose, certainly is not very interested in this whole area. In fact, she has inherited his gift for communicating with the beyond, with the departed. But she doesn't like it. She doesn't like doing that. And this, of course, is a very common trope with ghost movies, where you have somebody who is capable of communicating with spirits but doesn't like to do it, doesn't want to do it. And in her case, she's just tired of it and doesn't enjoy doing it. But it's always around her. I mean, she drives down the street in her little car where she gives her driving lessons, and there's a branch sort of waving on a tree, and she'll say, "Oh, hi, branch." You know, it's a ghost which is waving the branch at her, and it happens every day she goes past that. So it's that sort of thing. So anyway, into her life comes a man who is being haunted. His name is Martin Martin, and he is being haunted by his dead wife. And so he needs help. And so he turns to Rose, our driving instructress, and asks her for help, and would she please get in touch with the spirit of his dead wife and get her to stop haunting him. Well, then enters into the movie another character named Christian Winter, who is a washed-up rock musician, a one-hit wonder of a rock musician who wants to make a comeback, and he has kidnapped a local virgin who he needs for a spell that he is trying to cast that will get him back into the rock star world. And then something unfortunate happens to the woman he has abducted, and so he has to abduct another one, and of course he abducts Martin Martin's daughter, and the movie goes on from there. So we have all kinds of crime and crazy stuff going on, and washed up rock and roll humor going on, and through it all we have poor Martin Martin just trying to get his wife to stop haunting him and needing roses help, and she doesn't really want to give it, but she reluctantly decides to do so. So there are some funny lines in the movie. At one point, she is explaining what they have to do to end the haunting to Martin, and he says, "Oh, like The Exorcist." And she says, "Oh, I've never met him," which is one of the keys to Rose's personality, since she is totally out of touch with the things that most people are in touch with in terms of popular culture and things like that. And the movie has its amusing moments. What it doesn't have are amazing moments. It's a very low-key comedy, and again, I did not find it extraordinary at all. I found it very ordinary. Again, it's a likable movie, and people who enjoy that sort of that little subgenre of the fantastical comedy, you know, will probably have a good time with it. Critics have by and large loved it. I'm in a minority on this one. I didn't think it was all that terrific, but hey, it's a fun little movie, and I think that a lot of people will rather like it. And it's a movie that will maybe lighten the spirits in these times when our spirits maybe get weighed down a bit by all the sort of dour news that's around us. Second movie I want to turn to today, and in fact our next two movies, our final two movies, are both documentaries. And Slay the Dragon, which was made by Chris Durrance and Barrack Goodman, is a movie about a really important, really, really important, really, really, really important topic, namely gerrymandering and voter suppression and these things which are going on in the real world all around us. Now, this is a subject which can sort of get my blood boiling, because it does seem that one of our two major political parties is really convinced at the present moment in the real world that the fewer people vote, the better it is going to be for them. And I think it ought to be the opposite. I think, and a lot of people agree with me, by the way, that this is a democracy, supposedly, and therefore everybody should be able to vote as easily and as readily as possible. And this business about voter fraud being a big problem is obviously itself a fraud and all of this. So don't get me started. I think this is an enormously important topic. And just recently, we had this big election that took place in Wisconsin, and it was just extraordinary, with the actual Supreme Court of the United States weighing in and saying, no, this election can't be delayed, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic, because, well, you just can't change things like that, even as that same Supreme Court of the United States has been not holding hearings lately because they're worried about the pandemic. So apparently it's okay to make people go out and wait in line for hours because so many polling places are closed, risking their lives in the pandemic, when the members of that same Supreme Court are not going to risk their lives by having in-person court sessions. So like I said, don't get me started. Anyway, this is the sort of thing that Slay the Dragon is about. It is a political look, a historical look, a cultural look at various things that have been done in recent times that have the effect of, and probably in a lot of cases, the deliberate effect of suppressing the vote, chief among them being gerrymandering, that process whereby the people who have gotten the power in the most recent election in a year ending in 10, like, for example, 2010 or now 2020, to draw the district lines in their states, and they draw them with all kinds of funny shapes so that it will enhance the power of one party at the expense of the other party. And so you have situations where party A will win a very, very resounding majority of votes in certain areas and get a very resounding minority of actual seats because of the way the district lines have been drawn. So anyway, that is what Slay the Dragon is about, a hugely important topic. And Slay the Dragon brings together all kinds of experts who talk to us. And there are, you know, little graphics and videos and things like that that educate us on the system. I regret to report that Slay the Dragon, as a movie, as a documentary, is really ordinary. It does nothing to bring this subject alive. It's a very important subject, and the movie is perfectly responsible, and it takes what I regard as proper positions on all these different issues, but it is just such a ho-hum movie that I kept wishing it were just more exciting and would get the juices flowing, the spirits bubbling a bit more. It just does not do that. However, having given that negative word about it, I do hope people see it. And by the way, the title is Slay the Dragon. No, it is not a sword and sorcery fantasy. It is not a knockoff of Game of Thrones. It really is a movie about slaying the dragon of gerrymandering. I hope people see it. I hope people take its messages to heart. I hope people absorb its information. And I wish I could say that it were an exciting movie, but it's not. But that said, everybody should see it anyway because it will educate people on a topic which I think is enormously important. And again, I hope somebody makes a really exciting movie about this shortly because it's a film that deserves all the attention it can get. Our final movie for today, The Times of Bill Cunningham, is another documentary. And it actually dates from a couple of years ago, but it's just sort of getting into the current scene right now. Now, I have to say that about 10 years ago, another documentary was made about Bill Cunningham called Bill Cunningham New York, and it was better. I rather like it better than The Times of Bill Cunningham, which adds very little to that earlier documentary. But The Times of Bill Cunningham is out and about right now. Again, people can stream it very easily. And it's a very nice movie and a very lovable movie. So it's really worth talking about. Bill Cunningham was, until he died a few years ago, a photographer whose work appeared in The New York Times. And that is why this movie is one of the reasons why this movie is called The Times of Bill Cunningham. And what Bill Cunningham did, what he did for a living, was he went out on his bicycle through the streets of New York City and took photographs everywhere. And then the Times would give him once a week an enormously big spread where his photographs could be. And his photographs simply documented what was going on in the streets and sidewalks of New York City. But what Bill Cunningham's primary interest was in fashion. And what the Times of Bill Cunningham does that the previous documentary on Bill Cunningham does not do so much is get into his whole history and how he started out. And how even when he was a little kid, he became absolutely fascinated by people's clothing, people's clothes, what they wore. He just loved it. And he started making his own hats when he was a little kid. I mean, not hats for him to wear, but just hats that other people could wear. Loved making hats. Went into the army and kept on making hats and kept it sort of on the down low because the other guys in the army would think that it was a rather peculiar hobby to have. And then when he got out of the army, he went into the world of fashion. Became for a while a window dressing designer, and then went into the world of fashion. And that didn't work all that well because he wasn't all that excellent at it. But eventually he found what he was really born to do. Somebody gave him a camera and he started taking pictures and he decided, this is my true vocation. And that's when he started taking his photographs, and he went on for the entire rest of his career taking his photographs all over the place. An eccentric guy in a lot of ways. He lived in the same building as Carnegie Hall, but in a tiny little, almost cubicle. He slept on a single mattress stacked up on boxes of photographs. Even though he had lots of money, he was working for the New York Times for ages and ages and ages. And he gave huge amounts of money to charity and was a wonderful human being, but lived a very frugal and ordinary life. But he got to know the rich and famous. And the movie is very much about his relationships with the rich and famous and his photographs of the rich and famous and his great fascination with the world of fashion and how he brought this to life, not just by photographing the world of famous alone, but also ordinary people on the streets and sidewalks, which was his main love. The movie is replete with his photographs, a visual feast, and on that level alone, I recommend it. It's a fun movie, it's not too long, and it's full of his own high spirits and eccentricity, and it's a little tiny movie, but it's also a really fun, high-spirited movie. So I have to recommend The Times of Bill Cunningham. So that is my, I hope, somewhat high-spirited story this week, Jill.
As ever, thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Extraordinary, Slay the Dragon, and The Times of Bill Cunningham.